Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Justin, we have a podcast.
Diving deep. Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey everyone, welcome in to a mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays for at least one more Monday, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. on Mondays. During the football season, Seth and I are 2 hours on Mondays, 4 hours every other day. Outside of the season, 4 hours every day, Monday through Friday. Hopefully there's more short Mondays coming because that means there's more Texan playoff wins coming down the pipe. And that's what we're hoping for, man. Kansas City this weekend. We're going to dig deeper into that game. Aside from answering your questions about it in the mailbag, we'll do the deeper dive on that game with a six-pack a little later on this week. It'll drop on Friday to get into some of the ins and outs, things to watch for in that game. But I would say, as I'm recording this, the Texans are probably jumping onto the practice field right now out at NRG Stadium for their Wednesday practice. And my excitement level is very high for this game. Somebody tweeted earlier this week, I don't remember who it was, asking people just kind of, you know, kind of taking the temperature of the crowd on social media. What's your confidence level in the Texans in Kansas City this weekend in them winning? And I said, my confidence level is a 3.5. My excitement level is a 9.5. I'm really excited for this game. I think it's a game the Texans can win. I think if they play the same game they played against the Chargers, that'll be a winning game on the road against the Chiefs. You probably need to eliminate some of the bad mistakes. You know, in other words, can't fumble on each of your first possessions of each half. Probably need to have fewer than 86 yards of penalties, things like that. Bobby Sloak's play calling is going to need to be on point. You can't be coughing up opportunities, second and one at the opposing 4-yard line, and you take a sack. Some of that's on CJ. Take a sack on second down. So things like that probably can't happen, but in general, how they played play to play, especially in the second half offensively and particularly on the final drive where they just ran the ball 13 straight times, and it eventually ended in a touchdown and 7 minutes off the board. Couldn't have been a better drive. If they're able to move the ball like that, this is going to be a hard team to beat because I don't think a bad defensive effort is in them in this game. I think the defense is going to show up. I think D'Amico's going to have a good game plan for this. I think the defense has some momentum coming off of that, the win over the Chargers. They've seen Mahomes once within the last month or so. I think that'll help as well. I'm confident in the defense and the special teams. To me, the variable in all this is what version of the offense do you get? And if you get the version of the offense that showed up post the CJ to Hutchinson play in the Charger game, they'll win this playoff game. They'll be on their way to the AFC title game for the first time in their history, in the history of the team. So those are my just broad initial thoughts on the game. But we'll dive deeper on it in the Friday episode of the podcast. We'll get into the mailbag here in a minute. Some of the other Texans news going on. Before we do that, a quick reminder to hit the subscribe button on this podcast, wherever it is you're listening to it. I understand there've been some issues with the YouTube portion of it over the last couple of weeks. My apologies for that. Totally out of my hands. This is the part of the podcast I do, the content generation part, the posting it and trusting technology to get it posted correctly. That's on somebody else. I hope it gets fixed. So there's that. Hit the subscribe button, give us a rating and a review. That would be really nice. If you do want to hit me with a mailbag question, it's too late for this mailbag, obviously, but for the next one, houmailbag@gmail.com. Hopefully the off season is several weeks away, not imminent on Sunday and Monday this week. But either way, I expect a pop-in mailbag. Win or lose in this game, I expect the mailbag to be lively. And it'll probably be a jumbo episode next week, I would imagine. Either occurrence is as big as it gets within a season. Either beating the Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champs, or the season finally ending in the divisional round, as it has five other times with the Texans. So the Chiefs are a 9-point favorite. I haven't looked to see what the total is, but I think nine's a lot of points. My initial gut is to take the points at least. We'll see if I end up picking the Texans to win this game. But I feel good about it. I feel better. I feel more. It sounds weird. I was probably more confident they would beat the Chargers than I am they beat the Chiefs, just because the Chargers are not nearly the team the Chiefs are, and that game's at home. My confidence level is probably empirically lower that they're going to win, but I just feel better about this game going into it than I did that Chargers game. I feel better about the team, having seen what they did to Justin Herbert, having seen what the offense was able to do in the second half of that game, and obviously special teams made some plays. I thought it was an extremely well-coached game by D'Amico Ryans and his staff. So I'm less confident they beat the Chiefs only because they're the Chiefs. But my overall feeling, just of, you know, the lack of malaise, the happiness, the excitement, the joy going into this game is much, much higher, because I know what the reality of it is. You know, the chances are they're going to lose the game. But I still think the big thing is, I think there's you can come out of this game having not won it and still feel overall good about the season. And if you feel like that's a loser's mentality or whatever, then so be it. That's just now that will change next year, because I think now the expectation is, okay, you made your big moves. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. Injury played a lot in that. But I think it's very specific and pretty easy to see what needs to get fixed with this team. You need a little more depth in the secondary. And that's about it offensively, or defensively, I should say. Like, that's the only glaring thing to me, is that, you know, you get down to Eric Murray at safety, who, by the way, played well last week. The cornerback position after Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley Jr. is scary if you're a Texan fan, like bad scary. Like, I can't believe this person's going to have to play in a playoff game. So I think depth in the secondary, I think they need to swap out at least one, if not more, offensive linemen. I think there's staff changes that need to be made. I'll hold off on what those exactly need to be until we see what parking spot we end up getting here. Where does this roller coaster stop? It stops in the Super Bowl. I can see them bringing people back. But I think we'll know by the time the postseason is over, good or bad, what the specific things this team needs to do in the offseason. So this will probably be the last year that losing in the divisional round is acceptable, to me at least. So let me write that down. Last year, that's a topic. Okay. So there's that. The injuries and the waivers. Let's start with the waivers. Deontay Johnson, gone. I guess in retrospect, knowing who Deontay Johnson is, and this is his fourth team in a year, that it shouldn't be a big surprise. And yet I was confident that, given the short-term nature of what this relationship was going to be and the nature of D'Amico Ryans as a coach, you know, and what the culture is there, that and the plethora of leadership that they've got in that locker room, I would have guessed it would have worked out, at least to the extent that Deontay Johnson wouldn't have unraveled the way he reportedly did after the win over the Chargers. But, man, if you just get a playoff win and you're sulking in the corner about your lack of targets and you're in week three with the team, see you later. I mean, they beat the Chargers by 20 and Deontay Johnson wasn't even part of the game. So I don't have a ton of thoughts on Deontay Johnson, other than I think there's a good chance he's got serious problems other than just a football selfishness. Like when you commit career suicide as many times as he has in these places, in a job that pays more than, I'm going to guess, unless Deontay Johnson is sitting on a hedge fund that I'm not aware of. Like, if you're jeopardizing a job that pays this well four times in a year, that goes beyond just, I need my targets. Like, there's something upstairs that Deontay Johnson needs to get addressed.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So that's one of my initial thoughts on that. I don't think he plays in the NFL next season. If he wants to play football, I feel like the UFL is where he's going to go to do that. I don't even know that I'd bring him in if I were a UFL team. You know, like my guess is he'll find something wrong with that. So he just seems like a guy who's hard to be around, and the level of play doesn't match up to the amount of trouble that he is. You know what I mean? Like, Terrell Owens was a big headache. He was also a top shelf all pro receiver. Deontay Johnson isn't anywhere even close to that neighborhood. So it was fun while it lasted. I can't decide if my favorite catch of his three was the 10 yard catch to make a first down in the Titans game in week 18 or the 12 yard catch on third and forever to set up a field goal. Those are the things I'll be thinking about today, long and hard. Which of those two catches by Deontay Johnson was my favorite? So that's Deontay Johnson. Cade Stover, bad news there. It sounds like he broke his collarbone. If you've ever broken your collarbone, which I have twice, it's very, very painful. One was a clean break for me, like snapped in half. The other one was a hairline fracture. The clean break, man, oof, that sucks. The good news is it grows back and heals pretty quickly. If this were like week two, Cade Stover would probably make it back, certainly by like the bye week for the Texans this year. The bottom line is he will not be back for any of the postseason. That hurts. That's not a deep room to begin with. He's probably the most willing blocker in that room, even though he's only been playing the position for 2+ years. If I had to guess, Tegan Quatoriano is practicing again this week. So if he's healthy and ready to go, it'll be Dalton Schultz, Irv Smith Jr., and Tegan Quatoriano with Stover headed to IR. So sucks for Stover. When he got on the field this year, I thought he did some decent things. Again, he's not been playing the position very long. I think there's a lot to work with there with him. He's a good athlete. He's very tough. He's a fourth-round pick, man. If you get a rotational tight end out of a fourth-round pick, that's a win. Best of luck to Cade Stover, and looking forward to seeing you in training camp next year. All right, let's get into the mailbag. We'll do predictions on the Chiefs game and all that good stuff in the next episode. But let's get to the mailbag here. And we'll start with Dave in Round Rock. I'm jubilant that the Texans win over the Chargers, that the Texans beat the Chargers, and particularly how C.J. Stroud actually ran the ball to great effect. Side note, the Texans need to borrow a coach from the Astros to teach him how to slide. He's going to get himself killed out there. My question is about the Chargers. Okay, before we get to your question, I agree. That was cool to see CJ actually run the football. I thought how he kind of arrived at that place where he started to run more in that game was really interesting to me. If you missed it, CJ was answering a question about something. It might have been about him running. But what he said was, what he revealed was, on the interception that he threw, he was on the sideline looking at the iPad or whatever the Microsoft version of the iPad is. He was looking at that and he noticed that nobody's accounting for him. You know, there's no, I'm not even saying like a spy, but nobody was accounting for CJ using his legs. So that's when he got it kind of in his head to do that. And the end result was, I think you could attribute those 3 points at the end of the half, by and large, to that 27-yard scramble that flipped the field position with under 30 seconds to go. And yes, he needs to learn how to slide. That was a scary looking way to go to the ground, like down onto the front of your knees. Like, ugh, CJ, don't do that again. Use your legs. But yeah, I'm with Dave. Learn how to slide. Dave says, my question is about the Chargers. We know that they missed outdoor practice prior to the game, which may have affected their play. I'm curious if any of the players were directly affected by the wildfires, as in losing their homes or having family displaced. Do any of your sports media sources in LA have info on this? It sounded like to me the Chargers were the less affected of the two LA teams. The Chargers were less affected by the Rams. I don't know of any players on the Chargers that were affected or had their homes burned out. This is a long way of me saying I'm not sure, Dave, what exactly the effect was. I don't know that there were any. I think if there were Chargers whose homes burned down and they were displaced, we would have heard about it on the telecast. In fact, I'm certain we would have. I'll be honest with you, the sports media sources in LA that I have on stuff like this are too busy kind of worrying about their own homes and neighborhoods. A lot of them live in that part that's burning. You know, those are like north, like suburbs of the city up there, is my understanding. And so a lot of them, if not outright displaced from their own homes and evacuated, at the very least, they work with and for people that have been evacuated. But there's no way to tell how it really affected the Chargers. You know, and I didn't see anybody from the Chargers using that as a reason or an excuse as to why they lost the football game. But yeah, I don't have a whole lot of information on that, Dave. I apologize about that. France in the North is up next. Casey has been on a long layoff, something they've become accustomed to recently. What would you consider as the sweet spot for having time off before playing again? Would you prefer the rest versus the rust? I think a normal bye week, you know, just like a bye, having played football, like 2 weeks off to me, you know, there's a reason why teams come out of a normal bye week, you know, having not played in 14 days, they usually come out refreshed. 24 days, which is what the Chiefs are on right now, seems too much. But I understand, like, to me, it's not just rest versus rust. It's rest versus rust versus risk. I just made that up. And boy, that's a lot of alliteration right there. But what I mean is okay, for example, the week 18 game, like the Chiefs already knew they were going to get the first week, the wild card round off. And so they knew, and they played on Christmas. So that was already a long week going into week 18 to begin with. So I think the assessment there in week 18 isn't rest versus rust. It's risk of injury. Because I think being on the field playing football would be the smart thing to do just to stay sharp, even if it's for a few drives, just to get the blood flowing and you know, feel football for a little bit. But the risk of throwing Patrick Mahomes or Travis Kelce or anybody else out there is just not worth it. They'd rather get off to a slow start in the first quarter of a playoff game than risk throwing. I would think, I haven't heard this addressed, but so I think that's the deal. To me, the ideal amount of time off is 1 week. So if the Chiefs had just gone ahead and played against the Broncos in week 18, then you get the week off, then you play. Now there's going to be players on the team who could use, and there were on the Chiefs, that could use the 24 days off. You know, Chris Jones was banged up in that Texans game pretty good. And so I think there's some that are player specific, but I would say on the whole, on the aggregate, to me, it's a week off, 14 days. France in the North also asks, who would be your X factor Texans player, not CJ, who can turn this game in our favor? I have felt strongly since the Texans clinched the division that when the playoffs come around, that there will be a game-changing play made by Kalen Bullock at some point in this postseason. At some point, Kalen Bullock is going to have a pick like he did in that Miami game, like he has at other times this year. Kalen Bullock has had interceptions at really key times in the season. So I think Kalen Bullock's a big X factor, especially because if anything were to happen to him, you are not deep in the secondary right now. So I would say Kalen Bullock would be mine. Offensively, and then I think special teams is an X factor as a whole. That's a way for the Texans to kind of get some invisible yards I don't know that there's anything in the return game for the Texans that scares the Chiefs. Robert Woods is just sort of a guy back there. Damian Pierce has had some good moments in the return game, so maybe it's Damian. But I think the X factor is special teams, much the same way it was against the Chargers this past week. All right, next one. Chris in the ATL. Chris is a regular. Out of all the great plays and stats from the game against the Chargers, my favorite was that Stroud completed passes to 8 different players. Everyone who was targeted caught a pass. I think that's crucial for this offense to keep the momentum going and to get them a win versus the Chiefs, meaning Stroud having confidence in all his options must spread the love. Or do you think I'm valuing that game plan too much? I don't think you're valuing the game plan at all. They're going to do whatever it takes to take Nico Collins out of this game. So CJ is going to have to target other guys here. I think I'm less caught up in the spreading of wealth, getting 8 guys involved. Because let's face it, Nico had the monster game among everybody. The Texans were a little bit of a kind of a more balanced and at least closer to normal version of the Chargers in that game. Like, the Chargers were supremely lopsided. Like, Ladd McConkey had 200 yards, 9 catches. Nobody else had more than a catch, I think, in that game. The Texans were very Nico heavy. You know, 7 catches, 122 yards. That's a playoff record for yards in a game for a Texan receiving. But there were other guys who had 3 or 4 catches for the Texans in that game, but still very Nico heavy. To me, it's not about the spreading of wealth. To me, it's about, can you find impact plays from those other guys? So, you know, I need something more than just a 9-yard out route from John Metchie. I need something more than a check down to Dalton Schultz. I need impact plays. And I don't know where that comes from, to be honest with you. Xavier Hutchinson, the scramble play, that's a great one. But do I trust Xavier Hutchinson to be a guy who can consistently generate chunk plays? To this point in his career, he's not been that. So I think that's the big thing to me, is not the balance in the offense or everybody getting their touches. It's where are the explosives going to come from, or the chain movers come from, other than Nico Collins. That, to me, is a huge storyline in this game. Chris, thank you for the email, as always. Chris also says, Chris is answering a question I had in the last podcast about what percentage of emails you guys get that are ones that you just go delete, 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 you know, the promotional stuff. It says 99% of my personal emails are just garbage and go in the trash bin. Important communications are what texts or phone calls are for. Also, I lump in my emails from my kids' schools in that 99%, but don't tell my wife. Okay, well, Chris, I hope your wife doesn't listen to the Utopia Football podcast, because she just found that out. Yeah, it's crazy. I stop and read like maybe 3 emails a day, and I probably get 100, 150. All right. Chris and KC. So another Chris we've got here. I have no notes or questions. I'm just excited to get to play again at Arrowhead. What an absolute treat to have meaningful January football at one of the greatest venues in the sport. And keep in mind, Chris is a Texan fan in Kansas City, I believe. You want to be the best? You got to beat the best. Let's go. How many days is too many to wear my Stroud jersey to the office this week? Thanks, Sean, and keep on keeping on. Wear it every day, man. They can put up with the smell. Just don't wash it. Don't wash it. Just keep wearing it. They can, if your coworkers can't put up with the smell, they're soft and their football team's going to lose. I like that. I like reading just an email with some excitement in it, man. It is good to see everybody excited, because this has been such an up and down season excitement-wise for everybody. Oh, by the way, did you see my wife? I see my wife still hasn't taken down her birthday balloons yet. My birthday is a week from today. I told her, just leave them up and just change out Amy. Swap it out and just put Sean. That's easiest. So I think that's what she's doing. I don't think she's trying to get more birthday love. She got plenty of birthday love. Spike in Melbourne, Australia. Global podcast, baby. Spike in Melbourne. A couple of days after the Ravens lost, John Harris said it might have been a good thing, as it meant we're likely playing KC in the divisional round as opposed to the Bills. I was so despondent at the time, I couldn't get on board with that line of thinking. Now, I got to say, I'm feeling pretty good about the team and really good about the game against the Chiefs. I think our defense looked really ordinary when they played them a couple weeks ago. They have it in them to stonewall the KC offense. What do you think about our chances of winning the game without winning the turnover margin? This isn't even a specific Texans Chiefs thing. I don't think much of our chances if we don't win the turnover margin, just based on history. You know what I mean? Just based on the team winning the turnover margin and the percentage of time they win. I don't think the Texans are a special kind of team where I can be confident about them losing the turnover battle, but beating the two-time defending Super Bowl champs in their house in 30-degree weather. So I think turnovers are going to be a big part of the recipe for a win for the Texans. So I don't feel good about their chances of winning without winning the turnover margin. And I agree about the defense. And I think getting Azeez Al-Shaair back in this game is massive. It's just massive. The more you talk to guys on the team, the more you listen to them talk, the more you watch this team and the way they look with and without Azeez Al-Shaair, it's very evident that he is one of their, I would say, four or five most valuable players on that side of the ball. And I know that sounds like faint praise, but they got a lot of good players on that side of the ball. I would say Azeez, you know, just in terms of value, in terms of the drop off from him to the next guy, he may be there. Given the fact they've got a ton of depth at edge rusher, I think you could lose either Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter for a game and not feel the effect as much as losing Azeez Al-Shaair in a game like this one coming up. Now, I would say both corners, Lassiter and Stingley, might be as valuable, if not more, because there's nothing after those guys. But Azeez is super valuable. Getting him back is going to be big in the locker room and on the field. John Thompson is asking me, do you know what brand of cigars Joe Mixon had when he was smoking cigars in the locker room? I do. The Rex Ryan bye week pack. Didn't you hear him say that, John? Rex Ryan bye week pack. That's what it said on the little wrapper around the, you know, you use your fingers around the wrapper there. It said in little tiny letters, Rex Ryan bye week pack. Ben in the South. Ben says that off script fumble snap throw to Hutchinson seemed to really be a catalyst for the offense. CJ looked like last year's CJ after that play. If he keeps that swag up and the defense keeps being insane, they got a shot against anybody. Gotta love the playoffs. Let me just stop there. I agree with all that. I tweeted after that play, 2024 CJ fumbled the snap. Fortunately, it was 2023 CJ who scooped it up, rolled out, and hit Hutchinson on a on that route on that for that 34-yard gain on that play. Yeah, that was that's the biggest play, might be the biggest play of the CJ Stroud era so far. I'm not saying run it again because it was not a drawn up play. I'm just saying, like, of all the plays, that might be the most important play. If they go on to win the Super Bowl or even go on to get to the AFC title game, hell, just win this weekend, you're further than you've ever been. If they do that, it'll for sure be the most important play of the season. And if they get to the AFC title game, it's one of the four or five most important plays in the history of the franchise. No question about it. So let's hope that we have that discussion, that debate, if you will. Ben in the South says, P.S. I usually enjoy Ian Eagle and Charles Davis, but they were horrible on this game. It seemed like they were calling the game off box score updates instead of actually watching it. It was odd. Admittedly, I didn't get to watch the TV copy of the game, or I didn't get to hear it. In the press box, we obviously are watching it live from way high up, and then we've got TVs kind of in front of all of us there, like several TVs strewn out across the press box that are like 15 seconds behind the actual game. So it's great. It's like you watch the play happen, then you look up at the TV, you get to watch it again, then watch the slow motion replay. So, but we don't get to hear it. That's my suggestion. If anybody from the Texans is listening to this podcast, my suggestion would be if there would be some way that we could plug into the radio broadcast and the TV feed up in the press box. Now, if we have to give up some of the food to do that, then no, I'll just go without play-by-play because the food is fucking amazing. God, the Texans' food is good up in the press box. Man, killing it. All right, a couple more here. How many more do we have? Just a couple more, and then we'll be on our way. Joe Q, you knew Joe Q was going to get in. Joe Q says, Sean, as you've said many times, our feelings about the Texans are shaped by unmet expectations. The simplest way to characterize that might be the collapse in the power rankings from around 4th to around 14th. Let me stop right there. True. You know I'm a big believer in subjective power rankings by people who may or may not know less than I do about putting a power ranking together. It's the end all and be all. Moses may as well have walked down from the mountains with the power rankings etched into tablets as far as I'm concerned. Back to Joe Q. That ranking around 4 was probably highly inflated. All right, I'll stop right there. Yes, I felt it at the time. They were up there when they were winning games by, like, you know, they're winning 59-yard field goal games and beating Jacksonville with a last-second touchdown, allowing teams to hang around. They, if you watch them, if you just watch them week to week, every play, snap to snap, there you would not have. I will say there's nothing about them that said they should be ranked that high. There's plenty that's really good about this team. There's plenty of things they do that I think are in the top four or five in the league as a skill set or position group. But as a whole, I agree with that. The four was probably inflated. Since CJ had the best rookie season ever last year, maybe pundits and we were baking in improvement that wasn't really possible. Yeah, ultimately, I don't know that it wasn't possible. Like, it didn't happen. And I think he was held back by things that weren't necessarily his fault. He's not blameless in whatever statistical regression he had. He was much more careless with the football this year, I thought. Or at least I'd have to go back and watch games from last season again, but maybe more of, because he had some turnover worthy throws last year that were not intercepted. So maybe it was just, you know, maybe just a little more bad luck this year, or not bad luck, but maybe he had a lot of good luck last year with guys not securing interceptions. So Joe Q says, what do you think about that? What if we ask a different question? Was this year's 10-7 better than last year's 10-7? My view is yes, he says. Okay. I'll entertain Joe Q's view before I give you my view on this. He says a few quick points, and Joe Q might steal all my points here. The end of this whole thing, guys, if you're listening, may just be me going, Joe Q, you're smart again. We played a tougher schedule. Yes, Dallas and Jacksonville collapsed, but that was partially offset by Minnesota being a juggernaut. The NFC North is elite, whereas the NFC South is a joke. I agree. I think there's a lot of things about this schedule this year that the Texans had to deal with that they're dealing with all in one year. You know, all the craziness of three primetime games in a row, games being played on Thursdays and Wednesdays and Saturdays and Mondays and all these other days in primetime, playing on Christmas, playing twice in the, during the season, playing two games in 4 days, those kind of things. And yes, the NFC North being part of the bye week, being week 14, starting the preseason all the way back in the middle of July because of the Hall of Fame game. These are all things that either will definitely not be the case next year, or more likely, way more likely than not, will not be the case next year. We know they're not going to play the NFC North next year. And I don't think the NFC West is going to look like the North did this year with three teams, you know, with 12 or more wins, or and two with 14 or more wins. I don't think it's going to look like that. They won't be in the Hall of Fame game again next year. They just won't. I feel pretty strongly the bye week won't be week 14 again. We'll see if they play on holidays again. They played on Halloween. They played on Christmas. The Titans game ruined Thanksgiving. So three of their losses kind of ruined holidays. I didn't think about that. They ruined Halloween with the loss to the Jets. They ruined Thanksgiving with the loss to the Titans the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And they ruined Christmas with the Ravens beating them 31-2. That would be my request for next year for the Texans. Two requests. One, can we get audio of the feed for the game in the press box? And two, can you please stop ruining holidays? There's two simple requests. That's it. All right, Joe Q's second point as to why this year's Texans are better than last year's. We were much better, though not perfect, against dog shit teams. As part of that, our division record improved to 5-1, to 5-1 from 4-2. Yeah, they took care of their business. You know, the losses that sting are the Jets and the Titans loss. The Jets, who resurrected for a half from being dog shit, to use your word, Joe Q, and then immediately went back to being dog shit for the rest of the year. And then the Titans, where you gave up a couple long touchdowns and you let Will Levis look like he was amazing. Those are the two losses that sting. That Jets one, now that I like articulated, like the Jets were bad all season, but that one half against the Houston Texans, it was like they were the Undertaker, and then 30 minutes later, someone just stabbed the Undertaker in the heart with a stake. It's crazy. Like, they resurrected, and then they scored three touchdowns on three drives, and then all of a sudden, like, someone just, like guillotine them. So, but here's the thing about those two losses. Let's pretend they won the Jets and they won the Titans game. I'm going to try to make you guys feel better about this. If they won both those games but still lost to the Ravens, if they won those two games and the rest of the season was still the same, they still would have been the four seed because they would have been 12-5. They would have been tied with the Ravens, who are 12-5, and the Ravens had the head-to-head win. So the Texans would have, I mean, the Texans would have had to be 13-4 just to get the three seed as it ultimately played out. So, so those losses really, I mean, other than the embarrassment of losing to the Jets and to the Titans, that doesn't really hurt you. Joe Q also points out our best win as measured by opponents full season was much better. Last year it was Tampa. This year it was Buffalo. Yeah, that Buffalo win's a good win. I hope to get the opportunity to test exactly how good a win it was in the AFC title game. That's my hope there. Joe Q closes his argument by saying there were only three close losses last year, none against playoff teams. This year, five close losses, including three of the best teams in the league, Detroit, Green Bay, and Kansas City. P.S., this whole email is a violation of the Parcells rule. You are what your record is. You are what your record says you are, so be it. That's true, but you know, you are what your record says you are, especially in the NFL where there's not a committee picking the playoffs. But I think as far as like how to feel about the team moving forward, how we can rationally look back at this season and go, okay, while the offense really had us down in the dumps, even after wins, we were down in the dumps about the offense, especially early in the year. How do we feel about things moving forward? And I feel really good. It's going to take something horrible to happen on Saturday for me to not feel like this thing is still moving in the right direction. Didn't maybe get to where we had hoped to before the season. But I think injuries have a lot to do with that. I just wished Tank were coming back next year. It doesn't look like he's going to. We'll see. That one bothers me. All right, last one. Brian in Iowa. Good. Joe Q, great email. One of my favorite plays to watch is Robert Woods' hidden yardage on punt returns. All season, he'll fair catch the ball, then take a half step forward and place the ball 1 to 2 yards upfield. Sometimes it works, but not always. This is a veteran play, and I giggle every time I see it. I can't believe this is the one we're closing the podcast out on in the mailbag, but I'm kind of glad we are. That's hilarious. I've never noticed that. I got to bring that up with Seth and see if he's noticed that or see if that's a veteran move. See if that's a frequently used veteran move. I'm going to keep an eye on that now. I hope we didn't expose Robert Woods and his secret and that the refs are going to be looking for it now. That's really funny. Places the ball 1 or 2 yards up. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. The invisible yards I thought you were talking about was the occasional time that he actually returns a kick. And it's like, oh, wow. Look at that. We got an extra first down out of that. All right. Good email. Good mailbag this week, everybody. If you want to hit the mailbag, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. As you know, I encourage you to hit that subscribe button. We love that. Preview of the Chiefs playoff game, divisional round coming up later this week. Get your mind right, everybody, all right? Big thanks to Anthony Irwin, my producer. Big thanks to all of you for listening, sharing it with a friend, subscribing, and making this podcast the best that it can possibly be. I will see you this week. I'm Payne and Pendergast. I'll see you on Friday for a preview episode of this podcast. Until then, have a great week, everybody.